Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit, nonpartisan forum open to the public. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the club. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at commonwealthclub.org.
And it's now my pleasure to introduce tonight's speaker, Ron John Day. Ron John started his career in the food business at the age of 14 at Calcutta's Park Hotel as a vegetable cutter. After finishing high school, he graduated from the Institute of Catering Technology, Hotel Management, and Applied Nutrition. He spent 2 years as a senior chef in the kitchens of the Marriott Sheraton Hotel in New Delhi prior to moving to Hong Kong. And it is in Hong Kong where he met his wife through the Prince of Wales. So let me finish the story. It was while he worked at a restaurant called the Viceroy of India that he met the girl next door, Cody Gamble, daughter of retired U.S. Navy senior chief from a very exotic place called Caldwell, Idaho. Her parents were partners in the Prince of Wales pub, which was next door to the Viceroy of India, where apparently Ron John, as a bachelor, hung out. She became Mrs. Ron John Day in 1985. Ron John had an urge to own his own restaurant, and it was too strong to resist in Hong Kong, and within 2 years, he had opened 3 new deli restaurants in Hong Kong. As business expanded, so did the Day family, with baby Sarah back there. She no longer looks like a baby. Arriving on the 4th of July, 1987. This gave Ron John the idea of moving to America. And so in 1988, after studying various U.S. cities, he chose San Francisco, where he's been ever since, and for which we are most grateful. I have to say that I've enjoyed eating at his restaurant for about 15 years. I don't know if you've been there, but it's on Ellis and Cyril Magnon, my favorite. So we're most grateful that you chose us and that you are here. In addition to running his restaurant, Ron John starred in a PBS series called The Spices of India, and he speaks frequently on Indian cooking and cuisine. Twice a year, the New Delhi restaurant transforms into the Compassionate Chef's Cafe. On these special days, you won't receive a bill for the food you eat because it is offered to you purely as a gift. In turn, you can pay it forward, whatever amount you wish, offering a gift of your own that will uplift the lives of children in very real and extraordinary ways. His projects include an ashram at King Away Camp in New Delhi, India, founded to continue Mahatma Gandhi's movement to eradicate social injustice of being labeled untouchable. It's on this very location that Ron John is helping to fund the school for children of Harijan, untouchable street cleaners. Closer to home, he's also supporting the Tenderloin After School Program, which serves as a shelter from the street culture and many harmful influences that abound in this area. So you can see he's a very busy man. We're most privileged that he could be with us today. Would you please welcome Chef Ron John Day.
Just make sure you can all hear me. Wonderful. So, yes, that was fantastic to meet my wife and Prince of Wales. But the thing is, she was totally taken by me the first time she saw me. No, it's true. It was my skill of throwing dart. I could hit everything but the dartboard. So she was like, oh gosh, this guy needs to be saved, you know. So here I am. So tonight, thank you for being here. It's an amazing program Commonwealth Club is putting together for a India Heritage Month. I applaud you. India is right in the cusp of so many things happening, including the information technology, including the food, because everybody now is talking about sustainable, local, and all of that. imagine going to that pushcar fair and bringing that goat and having that amazing meal over here. We can butcher it for you, but no camel meat, please. It's too big of a haul. But India has been always eating local. It has always been eating things which is good for your body. Because in India, we believe whatever you put in your body is what is whatever is going to happen to you. So it is a very, very old culture. It's been around for 5,000 years or more, and so has its cuisine and spices. Spices, you know, plays a very, very important role in the life of Indians. Many things happens with spices. When you use the spice, it does flavor whatever you're eating, but it also has amazing qualities, which is medicinal qualities, which helps you, you know, sustain and actually nurture your body in a beautiful way. So today we are going to do a curry, just a simple, basic curry. I want to show you how to make a very simple curry. What is a curry? You know, a lot of people think it is like a berry from the tree, which you kind of grind and make it into something, you know. Some people already, if you mention Indian food, oh my God, that's so spicy, I can't really eat it. But curry basically just means a sauce. It could be 100,000 different sauces, you know. It could, and in India, it's an amazing, diverse country. So imagine putting Europe together, because we have more than 24 states in India. Each state has its own language, own script, own food, own dress, own culture. So it is an amazing diversity. However, it is coming closer together. One of the most popular bird in India is tandoori chicken now. You can find it everywhere in India. So can you find it everywhere else in the world. But curry has sometimes been, mislabeled. Today I want to make something very, very easy for you to cook, which is just a basic curry. Now, when you do a basic curry, what I say is there is two different parts of things you need. You need a wet trinity and a dry trinity. A wet trinity is onion, ginger, and garlic. So, like 2/3 of onion, 1/3 of ginger, 1/3 of garlic. And then you have the dry trinity, which is turmeric, coriander powder, and cumin powder. So coriander powder will be the bulkier part, will be again the 2/3, and then 1/3 cumin and 1/3 turmeric. And you start with a little bit of oil. Today we're going to do a chicken curry. And you're going to be tasting the same kind of chicken curry over there, which is behind you, and I'm the only person between you and the buffet. So don't look at me so harsh, okay? Please. So one of the things I use is just vegetable oil. You can use a very light olive oil. You can use any kind of oil. A lot of people think we use a lot of ghee and butter. We don't. In our restaurant, we don't. We use vegetable oil. And with some dishes which requires butter, we do. Otherwise, we want to cook just like at home. In India, at home, we do not use a lot of butter. You can't really afford a lot of butter. It is expensive. So we use vegetable oil so that it's nice and flavorful. So we start with some oil. This is a little challenging for me, cooking in a restaurant, then working with really high-powered. So we will start with some onions. So it still needs a little bit of coaxing so that it can start to caramelize a little bit. It's very simple. So over here, I don't know, I don't want to tip it too much. I just had the onion, and then I have a ginger garlic paste here, a little cayenne pepper, which is optional, which you can use, you may not use. There's the turmeric powder. The darker one is the cumin. The lighter one is coriander. Coriander is nothing but cilantro seed, which has been powdered. Cilantro is something which is very, very recognized here in the U.S. Everywhere else in the world, they call it just coriander. So the secret to a nice gravy is instead of chopping the onions, you can blend the onions in a blender. So you'll have a nice smooth gravy. Or you can have a little nice mouthfeel. You can have a little pieces. And this is how you can do the onions, where you chop it up real, real fine. So how many people cooks curry at home? Oh, nice. So tell me about something. Oh, my daughter put her hand up too. All right. Cooking for today's environment is an amazing idea to do. You know, we do have the resource of all the information, all the ingredients. One of the things which we don't have is time. So cooking something really tasty, healthy, quick and easy is kind of like looking at what you have and cooking with it. So here we are doing a very traditional style of curry. But if you do not have time, you can go to Indian grocery stores. You can find jars of pickles, many kind of pickles. Pickles in India is done differently. We pickle them, or we kind of temper them with different vegetables, spices, mustard oil, and it's a nice and spicy flavor. Why do we use pickle? A lot of time when people are working in fields out in the open, it's really sunny and hot, people need to have a lot of hydration. So they will have rice which has been kind of soaked in water for a long time, sometimes overnight with a little bit of sour fermentation. And then they will eat a lot of it with a little bit of pickle added to it. So it's nice and spicy, and we can have a little bit more rice, and then have a little bit bite of more pickles. So you can take that pickle jar and actually put it in a blender and blend it. Put it back into the jar. So when you feel like cooking Indian food, take a little bit of oil, put your meat or vegetables, add just a teaspoon of pickle in it, stir fry it, add a little water in it, let it cook, you're done. So that is the tip of the day for you today. So it's starting to caramelize, and it takes a little time for the onions because it does have a lot of water in it. So now what we're going to do, add a little bit of ginger garlic paste. So like 2/3 of that and just about, you know, 1/3 of ginger and onion in it. Okay. And it will start to splutter a little bit. See? I just blended it. I pureed that, yes. So now I'm going to add a little bit of turmeric, which is just 1/3. And then the coriander, 2/3, 1/3 cumin. I'll add the chicken to it because the chicken has a little bit of moisture. So spices, when you just add to the you know, hot oil, the aromatic oil will kind of can get burnt. So if you add a little bit of moisture to it, it helps it to basically not get burned, but it gets it a little time to get used to the temperature and slowly get the flavors into the chickens, okay? So, I beg your pardon? Yes. It's this one says 350, but I think it's going at 250 or something like that. I love high heat because, you know, that way you can, this is the process where you need the high heat, and then you can just add the water to it for the sauce and put it down and let it cook. I usually add my salt after I add the water so that water sometimes, you know, oozes out when you're adding vegetables and things like that when as soon as you add salt to it. I'm going to let it sweat a little bit because, you know, sweating is good. When you're having people staring at you, it's definitely good, right? So let it sweat a little bit. And so who loves to cook a way where you do not follow a recipe? See, that is the way I love to cook. When I'm cooking at the restaurant or when we have recipes, of course, if you're going to go have a chicken korma, chicken tikka masala, you're expecting that, yeah, you have to follow things. But for me, doing a freestyle cooking is the most fun thing to do. And especially when you don't have too many things in the fridge. Sometimes it's horrible when it turns out if you don't have it. But most of the time it's great. But how do you start, you know, freestyle cooking? So there is a process in your head which happens to you. So first you look at all the ingredients which you have and the spices if you're going to cook with spices and kind of try to figure out or see whether you like a certain flavor profile. For example, you have cilantro. And then, of course, you have maybe some cardamom and some cloves and, you know, maybe some ginger. What do you have? You have some maybe lemongrass. Definitely the cilantro is not going to go really well with some of the items. But it is a personal choice. There's no one way or the other you have to do this or that. Figure out what kind of flavor do you feel like having tonight. Okay, excuse me, let me just look at this sweat. This is very nice. So this is the moment you can see it's just a little bit of flavor coming out, some of the meats are kind of becoming translucent. So this is the time I'm going to add the water, so which will make the curry sauce. I'm going to also add a little bit of salt. Little bit. And for a little bit more flavor, I like chopped tomatoes, which gives it that sweet and sour taste. And some cilantro. A lot of cilantro. I love a lot of cilantro. And this is as easy as this. I just wanted to try and make it very, very simple so that, you know, you can see that you can make something very, very, in a very simple fashion. So now I'm going to let it kind of cook a little bit and reduce, and then we'll be ready to taste it. I have used the chicken tenders because the tenders are easier to cook very quickly. And during a demo like this, if I use the Thai, it's going to take a long. This is not the most efficient equipment for me to work with. So I thought chicken tender would be nice to cook very, very easily and give that flavor into the chicken very quickly.
Can we assume it's organic?
Yes, it is. I was a happy chicken. Happy, happy chicken. I won't do the chicken dance. So I was talking about freestyle cooking. So freestyle cooking, for me, I would definitely look at the, if you're a vegetarian or non-vegetarian, I would look, start with the flavor. For me, I think ginger and sometimes mint will work very well with me. Lemon and mustard will work very well with me. But there is no one way or other. Whatever you have, you should experiment. And that is how you can really start creating a progression into a style of cooking. So you're not just doing traditional food, but you are now trying to see what ingredients you have, what equipments you have, and you can start bringing in a little bit of authentic flavor, but move forward into today's world and create your own style of cooking. Any questions so far? Yes. Oil.
The migration of Indian cooking to the north along the Silk Route, was it a two-way process? Did some ingredients come south, some go north? But primarily that migration of to the Middle East, and then if you put it in a time frame perspective.
Absolutely. So the first part was what we call tempering in Indian cooking. We use hot oil and then we'll add different spices to it and get that oil a certain flavor profile. Then we'll add our vegetables, our meats in it and then stir fry it and then reduce it down to a little bit when the oil is starting to leave the sides of the meats or the vegetables, then add a little bit more oil. And then depending upon whether you want more, you know, like curry sauce in it or not, you know, you can have it dry or less. And you can do that with anything and everything. You can start with mustard. Mustard, I think, is a beautiful spice which has jackal and Hyde persona. When you, you know, like make a mustard paste and you're trying it, definitely have the Hyde persona. It's harsh. It's spicy. But if you use the same whole mustard in an oil and just temper it and use that oil to make a dish or a sauce, it has a nutty, beautiful flavor in it. It's nowhere spicy at all. So tempering, you can use that garlic, use ginger, use anything basically, you know, to create that flavor, your favorite flavor. Coming to the history. Most of India was discovered originally through the Khyber Pass in the Himalayas. Right from Alexander the Great, the Huns, the Mughals, all of them came from the Khyber Pass in the north. Original race in India were Dravidians, and I'm talking about 5,000, 6,000 years ago. And as more rulers or invaders came to India, the original race was pushed back into the south. So even though we say Sanskrit is the root language of India, there is a language which is older than Sanskrit, which is the original Dravidian script, which is very different from Sanskrit. So as people came from the north, they brought with them spices, they brought with them different style of equipments which they were using. For example, the tandoor. Tandoor came from the Middle East, and it came as a horizontal oven, but it changed its shape, style, became a barrel shape and very vertical. And you do use bread on the side of the tandoor, it's on the barrel, and then you cook it. It's one of the freshest bread in the world, and then you fish it out. Same with ingredients like saffron. It came with the Mughals. Same with nuts and raisins being used a lot, like korma style. In the older style of India, mainly vegetarians. There was a lot of elephants, but there was no horses. So when Alexander the Great came, we couldn't move that fast with the elephants. But his people actually learned about how to live in a harmony, and that's when he went back, but went back with different spices in it. Later on, the sea routes were discovered, which the Middle Eastern kept to them in a very, very secretive way. When people will say, well, hey, where did you get these spices? These are black pepper, for example, turmeric. No refrigeration in those days. Meat goes bad very, very quickly as soon as you slaughter. But when you cure it with spices from India, it stays for a very, very long time. So black pepper was like gold. How do you get it? Only the Middle Easterns could give it to the Romans. Why do you think this whole Arabic numeral came about? Imagine multiplying 2,500 in Roman numeral with 5,620. Very difficult, right? But the same people, those Arab traders, taught the Romans how to use numerals, 0 to 9, which they learned in India. So the Romans thought these are Arabic numeral. So they named it Arabic numeral because while they were doing the spice trade. So the Arabs came to the south of India, not to the north of India. Cochin was one of the biggest port. That's where you have the original, you know, like black pepper, turmeric, cardamom, cinnamon, and all of those. The tea plantation over there, the coffee plantation over there. So spices went through different routes, and then, of course, European sailors discovered it's not that big of a secret. There's no dragons, you know. And there is possibility of you actually sailing all the way over there and start trading. And so we had the Portuguese, the Spanish, the French, everybody came to India to get a piece of those beautiful spices and use them in their food. It's almost ready, so I'm going to turn it down and let it just simmer until we're ready. So does that kind of answer your question? Wonderful. Great. I would like to, you know, if you have time, we can take some questions. Yes, sir. Spices is a very broad term. So depends on the spice. There are original spice, certain spice, which you find in certain countries. For example, black pepper. Black pepper originated from India, but that is the most popular spice in the whole world today. Every table has a cruet set of salt and black pepper. But it started in India. Same with cardamom, same with cinnamon and cloves and also turmeric. But then chilies, which is such an important part of Indian cuisine, was brought in by the Portuguese and Spanish people to India. However, there is arguments, they say, well, you know, there is kind of chilies which naturally grows in India, has been around for a long time. in the Andaman Islands. For example, the hottest chili in the whole world grows in India, called Bhujaloka, ghost chili. So if you can imagine, a hot cayenne chili will be 80,000 heat units, called Scovilles. Hottest of the habanero is 250,000 heat units. Ghost chili, 700,000 to a million heat units. If you come to my restaurant, only if you talk to me or my daughter, you can have a taste of ghost chili sauce, which I make with 30% ghost chili. Then I add habanero, serrano, jalapenos, rice chili, cayenne, paprika, some really nice lemon juice, orange juice, and vinegar. So it's still crazy hot. But I tell everybody the whole story about the heat units and everything, and then give them a toothpick so that they can start by adding just a little bit to their sauce, and then add a little bit more so that they can enjoy it, so their evening is not ruined. However, having the ghost chili for 18 years, I have used it as a weapon only twice on my guest. Couldn't help myself. Well, that is a good record, right, in 18 years.
The stores sell a spice called curry. Do you recommend that? Because I've heard that. I don't know what's in it.
Curry, when they do a curry, usually it will be a blend of different spices, just like, you know, you can have the coriander, the cumin, the yellow color comes from the turmeric. They will have some cayenne. Then add other spices, like flavor spices, like cardamom, cinnamon, cloves to it. It all depends which one you are doing. I do recommend curry powder over curry paste, because curry paste has too much chemicals added to it to do the pH balance, and it becomes very, very similar tasting with vinegar in it. That is how I created this whole blend. Actually, I created it for my wife. She wanted to cook like me, and I said, honey, that's not going to happen. And she married me because I'm a cook anyway, you know. So started by giving me an apple. You know, I was there at the Prince of Wales pub, and she didn't know I was a chef, and she said, well, can you peel this in one go? I'm like, I don't know, let me try. So I peeled it, and I gave it to her. She's like, oh, thank you. I'd hate peels. That's what she said. And I felt like that Adam and Eve kind of thing. She ate the apple, and it hurt my ribs. Well, what can I say? So I went into the history of India, dug out favorite dish of three kings and three queens from six different regions. And from that inspiration created spice blends. And so you can see the portraits of the kings and the queens. For example, a Calcutta lemon mustard curry. So Maharani of Kuch Bihar fought for women's lib in 1887. Before 1887, only boys could go to school, called Pathshala. But she fought so that girls and boys could go to school. And her favorite dish was lemon mustard fish curry. So that, like, inspired me to create the lemon mustard, Calcutta lemon mustard curry blend. Another one is sweet and tangy mango soup masala. Dilip Singh was made a king of Punjab when he was 3 years old by the British, so that they could actually rule Punjab for him. But he loved his mangoes so much, they had to import a certain style of mangoes to London for him. And that gave me the inspiration to create that blend. So like that. But to answer, yes, curry powder, but just look at the ingredients. Sometimes there's a lot of fillers in it, you know, that way you would know what kind of fillers is in it.
What about curry leaves?
Curry leaves are again, we flavor oils with curry leaves. In South India, it is really popular and used in many, many dishes. So it grows in a tree, and you can find it in most of the Indian grocery stores. You can also get dried one and put it in a freezer to maintain you know, a certain oil in it, and then when you're using it, you just take a little bit of oil, use it. So it gives a very nice flavor to it.
Hi, thanks for everything. What I'm curious, what are some vegetarian dishes that you like to make at home that make you really feel at home?
Lentils for me is very important. Like rice and lentil, or like bread, like roti or lentils, yellow lentils or black lentils. It's almost like, depending upon the region of India, there are sayings. For example, if you go to Punjab, northern area, they will greet you by saying, dal roti khaya, means have you had your dal and your roti? It's a greeting almost saying, you know. Or if you go to Bengal, they will say, mach bhat khecho, that means have you had your fish and rice? So depending upon the region, for me, I grew up all over India. So I'm a Bengali to start with, but I'm more of a Punjabi because I'm settled in Delhi. So I love my dals and rotis and also fish and rice. So that I love. And vegetarian depends on my mood changes with the food. Certain days I feel like something. I want to kind of like find that and have it. So I do not cook South Indian food, so sometimes I'll have cravings for South Indian food, like dosas and idlis. Then I'll like to have those. So it changes for me. Yes.
Speaking of vegetarianism, as China is getting wealthier, they are starting to eat more meat, which has implications for, you know, limited resources, water, land, and so on that it takes to grow animals. What percentage of Indians are vegetarian now, and how, and is that changing?
Originally, I would say 10 years back, 80% of India was vegetarian. There's a million plus people in India, million plus people in China. So every sixth person in the world is a Chinese and an Indian. So in India, vegetarianism and eating something local has been a part of our persona forever. It's only in the big cities is becoming very westernized. You have amazing McDonald's in Delhi. Do not have a red meat on the menu. Not a single red meat. You have chicken and fish, about 10 different vegetarian dishes. And they deliver to your home. By the way, the number for calling McDonald's for a home delivery is 666-6666. I'm not joking. It is true. So only in the city, it is changing. More things are becoming accessible. Industrial revolution in America made us choose convenience of food over content. And a lot of things like that is happening in the cities. In the rural area, it's still the same. And people are very conscious about what they're putting into their bodies still in India. But things are changing. You know, it's world is such a global village now. You sneeze, they know it on the blog, they have pictures of it and everything else, you know. So everybody's connected with everything. And I think in India we love to argue over solving world politics, you know, and every other thing. So food is a very important part. And I think definitely the convenience is playing a major role, and how the food, you know, landscape is changing in the cities. I hope it doesn't change so much that it goes back to mass things. Hopefully, the change is coming at a time when people can talk because of the social medias and everything else, and be aware of things without being bombarded and given certain price points, so you're totally kind of pushed into that direction of choosing. So I have no idea, to tell you the truth. I am here in San Francisco, but I go to India every year, so I try to keep in touch with everything.
Hi, I have a question.
Yes.
So I noticed you did not use any hing today, and my question to you is, can you talk a little bit about the medicinal values of hing, and why in particular you chose not to use it?
Hing is acetifida. It is a gum from a tree. Hing is only used in food when you have lentils involved, because it is an anti-flatulent, meaning gives you less gas when you have those amazing beans. So today I was cooking chicken, so I did not need to use. But if I was cooking dal or certain garbanzo dishes, I would definitely use the hing in it. You can have hing in big pieces of powder form. It will become very bitter and very overpowering in smell if you use too much of it. You just need just a small pinch for 4 people when you're cooking different bean dishes and such. Acetifida, A-S-E-A-C-T-I-F-E-T-I-D-A. Or if you just go hing, H-I-N-G, in Google, it will tell you, okay, hing means this and that. Great. It works with every beans. It is. Don't send me an email. It didn't work. Next question, please. Any other questions? Yes.
Do you use thickening in your curry? Do you use flour to thicken the...
We don't. We can use the onions. Onions will thicken. You know, onion, once you use that paste, it will thicken the curry by itself. You can also use cream in it. You can also use paste of different cashews or almonds to thicken it. But you have to be very careful. If you use too much of it, it will start to have a bitter taste. But if you add onions, a little bit of yogurt, a little cream, it will have a nice thick. Right?
When you're using spices, so like hot spices, do you prefer like cayenne pepper versus like fresh peppers or combination or?
A combination. I like to have, when I'm cooking for myself, if I was going to cook this curry for myself, I'll have onions, ginger, garlic, fresh jalapenos chopped up real fine, and be, you know, frying it first. Then later on, add cayenne to it as well, so it's nice and spicy, but it has some like more sparkly flavors to it. It's a personal taste, and then you can just try and see which one you really like.
When do you use ghee?
Ghee is clarified butter. Ghee we use sometimes when you have made a fresh naan and you just, you know, just brush the naan with a little bit of ghee. It gives that flavor. But other than that, there is a chicken makhanwala, means butter chicken. So we'll use butter in that or ghee in that. But other than that, we don't use too much of that. However, it's a very, very flavorful product, ghee or butter. For me, anything in moderation is an amazing idea. So when you use the oil, when I use the oil in the beginning, you can add a small dollop of butter in it. It will flavor this amazingly. So, you know, you shouldn't say no to good things. just in moderation.
I was impressed by your commitment to social justice, and I wondered if you might just speak to the things that resonated with you that led to your commitment there.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. You know, we do a lot of charity work. We're always donating food or doing this or that to different charities. And we have been in the same location for 23 years. This is the 24th year for us. And when I look at different things we are supporting, we feel that most of the money raised goes to the expenses of putting up the whole event. And that is what led us as New Delhi restaurant staff and extended family to think, what can we do, which is very local? And something like, if your foundation is cracking, you don't go to your neighbor's home and your forefathers' house to fix their roof. First, you fix your kind of foundation. And in Tenderloin, across the street, is one of the worst neighborhoods. And the people who are really working hard is the people who works as the backbone of our hospitality industry. These are the busboys. These are the line cooks. These are the janitors. You know, these are the people who are doing two jobs, three jobs, not using the social security to get extra benefit. But they're kids. They don't have anywhere to go. It's the narrow corridor of their apartment building, which is their playground. You go downstairs, you have the drugs, the crimes, and the prostitutes, and, you know, gangs and everything else. So Tenderloin After School Program helps 300 kids, 5 to 17 years old. And we want to help them really become global citizens. Everybody in this room feels global citizen. They don't. You know, when you're in the middle of all these adversities, you do not feel like a global citizen. So we started by doing a few programs. One is called Beat Crazy. We bring in master percussionists, 10 of them, from different countries. Tabla, taiku drum, kitty plus, steel drums. Because drum is something you can play right away, unlike a flute or a string instrument or a piano. And you can start enjoying it. But when you're seeing all these masters coming from all over the world, you start to think a little bit global. Then we have the restaurant opening up during the Halloween for the kids to dress up and come. And we have 6 different chefs from different countries, Chinese chefs, Japanese chefs, Italian chefs, French chefs, American chefs, Irish chefs, Indian chefs. And we get cookies, cupcakes, candies, but they can dress up. Imagining dressing up and going, you know, trick-or-treating in Tenderloin is a little dicey. We also take them to different universities to give them that idea of breaking the cycle. Then we connect them with a group of kids in Gandhi Ashram in India, where we are supporting a dance drama. It is the message of Gandhi that all human race is one. And they started with 300 kids. Now there are 16 kids whom we are going to support to go spread the message with the dance drama all over India. And hopefully in 2013 or 14, they can come visit the kids over here and they can connect. And we are exchanging pictures and also Skype. We are setting up the Skype, actually. It is not yet ready because of the time difference, because it's 12 hours difference, and it is an after-school program. So we are kind of figuring out the Skype. That way they can feel there's friends across the ocean. 28th of August, this next Sunday, we are going to have a non-stop Bollywood dance party at New Delhi restaurant. It's going to transform into Compassion Chef's Cafe. Suggested donation is $50, but anything you like. And every single thing is, all the costs are taken care of by us, including the staff who are going to be working that day. And 100% of the money will go towards. So if you go to the Facebook Compassion Chef's Cafe or CompassionChefs.org, you can then see some of the things we are doing. Thank you. I think, are we almost ready to take the first bite? Mm-hmm. All right. So is the buffet ready to go? Now, before we start, let me tell you a little bit about Hannah. Renda, she's an amazing lady. She owns the Hannah Garden, and she has been a supporter of Compassionate Chef's Cafe from day one. So big applause for her. And Hannah, would you like to say a little bit about what is Hannah, Renda, so that, you know, can we take that microphone to her? Because she is amazing. And so you get to taste how you will have this temporary henna. Okay, Renda, please.
Hi. Can you hear me okay? So henna is a natural plant dye that's been around for over 5,000 years, and it's been used all over India, Southeast Asia, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Bangladesh, also all over Africa and the Middle East. So it crosses borders, and it's something beautiful that is usually done for weddings or Diwali or Eid, depending on different religious backgrounds. And it's a way for people to decorate themselves and their spirit. I started doing henna in 1996, and I opened the first henna salon actually in Berkeley, just doing henna as a way to share culture. Cultural exchange, because it's needed. And the more we do that, I feel people outreach more to understand the people from those countries and those cultures. And now it's a modern-day temporary tattoo in the West. Men always ask me, can men do it? And anything goes in the U.S. We have design books, multicultural design books. We could do more traditional things. Henna lasts anywhere from 1 to 2 or 3 weeks. When we do it here, we're not wrapping your hands with black pepper and garlic like we might do a bride and put saran wrap and cotton. We're doing simple, easy tattoo. It's drawn on, it dries, it takes about 5 to 10 minutes. We put a lemon solution on, and basically in the first 5 to 10 minutes, you don't want to touch anything or touch your tattoo or hug someone because it can smear, and it's a plant dye, and it does stain clothing permanently. So that's the one thing. There's no fast way to take it off. There's no type of nail polish remover. So make sure you don't move when I'm drawing on you. And I'm here and ready to start doing henna as well. Okay. Enjoy.
Thank you, Renda. So if you like any one of the spices, there is a counter over there. 10% of all the sales of the spices will go to Compassionate Chef's Cafe. We have only 10 sets today. Thank you for being here. Cynthia, thank you for inviting me to be a part of this amazing program. I hope you enjoyed. And whenever you're ready, I think the buffet will be opening very soon. Cynthia.
Please, a warm thanks to Ranjan Day for sharing his knowledge and time with all of us. Thank you so much.